This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
And now, a yak.
Yak!
Yak! Ladies and gentlemen, Orange Bloods, welcome back to the Deep Dig Podcast. My name is Alex Dunlap. I am the lead football analyst over at orangebloods.com. I don't even know what the hell I do at Roster Watch. I just run, like, Orange Bloods content and Roster Watch content run my life. So it's like, you know, maybe that, like, I don't think I'm any kind of boss, like, I'm any kind of boss over at Roster Watch, because it seems like I'm always the one being told what to do by customers. But before we get into any of that, I gotta say, even before we even start, my hands smell like shrimp. And once you get shrimp on your hands, when you get the like live shrimp from the store, when you've been dealing with them, it's much worse. You guys who fish know it's much worse whenever you get dead shrimp, like bait shrimp. Like, you get this, you know. That's why, like, I love fishing with live shrimp out of my, you know, when I go fishing for like reds and stuff like that out of my kayak, I love having those live shrimp, because like the dead shrimp, it used to be like I would get them, I would have to handle them so much, and it literally made one of my kayak paddles stink so bad that I didn't want to use my kayak during any other point in time. Because it, like, that smell of those dead shrimp that they use for, you know, for bait and fishing, it sticks with you. And here's the, you will never catch a speckled trout with a dead shrimp ever. You're better getting one of the little day glow lures that glows and just like fishing under the lights at a pier. If there's a dude standing next to you using that and you are, you know, even like more skilled, you could basically be like, when you're casting out, like, let's just say you're at a pier, right? And you're casting out at speckled trout from the pier under the lights at night. What you want to be doing is you want to be where you want your bait to land. Hopefully your live fish to land is right there in the area where the lights are starting to, like where the circle, like reflection of the light in the water, at the very edges of that reflection. That's where they hang out. That's where they lurk. That's where they are. I mean, specks are predators. If you ever catch a big one, you'll see they got some teeth on them. What they're doing is they're lurking in the shadows and circling around those lights, looking for the dumb little bait fish that come in there and swim around, and they just dart in and get them. So even if you're an angler who like knew that, and you were casting in all the right spots around the lights, and it was a place that was fishy where you saw other people catching specks, you're never going to catch one. Not in Texas. Not with a dead shrimp. At least not in places where they feel, you know. I mean, around a pier, they fear, I'd imagine fish feel pressure the same way that like wild animals and ungulates and stuff do. Maybe not, probably not in the same ways, but around a place like a pier, they're probably, you know, a little bit more selective, and you're not going to catch a speckled trout on a dead shrimp off a pier in Texas, unless it's just a place that's like never fished. And the guy who has the little shrimp, like the little day glow shrimp guys that they sell in there in the bait shop, and they're so small that you think, man, no fish is ever going to bite this. You know, I want one of those big ass shrimp. I'm going to throw it out there, man. It's a fish. It's going to eat it. No, it's like you get one of these little tiny little, they're tiny little lures, and they come with just like two of them on there, and it's gonna hit for you almost as much as like a live shrimp. And you don't have to take the aerator out there or anything. So the shrimp tip. And why I got onto this is my hands smell like it, because whenever I buy shrimp, I like to buy them I mean, usually from the farmer's market, but sometimes you can get them at HEB fresh, never frozen from the Gulf. And that sounds like an awesome deal for me. It's about like the farmer's market, except those ones at the farmer's market come frozen. So whenever you get into these shrimp, I mean, they just like, you don't want them to have too much of a smell on them. Like that smell of the dead shrimp. Like I said, you get on it gets ingrained in the rubber of your kayak so bad that you don't even want to put your kayak paddle up in your goddamn garage because it's going to make the whole garage smell like shrimp after a long trip. Even though fresh, never frozen shrimp have I've washed my hands like 3 times. Like I can still smell the fish. What is that? Like it's from the movie, the beach, right? The cook, man, he keeps washing his hands. He can still smell the fish. And the reason I had to do it was because my wife does like, she does a shitty job with veining them, taking the like peel them and veining them. And if you're gonna cook them, like she was, you know, like she's probably planning to cook them. I don't know how she is, but regardless, it doesn't matter how. It doesn't matter. You need to vein your damn shrimp, especially if they're wild caught. And it seems like to her, you know, it's like you just kind of vein them very, like you can cut it at the very top and kind of take a little bit of the like. My deal is you vein that, you take all, you peel it and you take the, you vein that thing down the whole shrimp and you do it like under running water and you know, you get that thing cleaned out. It's like, admittedly, some people don't do it. I've seen like, especially when we're talking boiled shrimp or like shrimp cocktail, I see a ton of people that eat shrimp cocktail where it's not, you know. Or there's stuff like reds that they do like on the East Coast. I've seen a ton of people just eat it when it's not, you know, you get peel and eat shrimp. What peel and eat shrimp is shrimp that it's been boiled and you can eat it, but responsibly you probably should. I mean, maybe, I don't know if it's a response. It just like seems crazy. You got to fucking vein that thing. I think that that's like, I think that that's their intestines and like their excrement. And maybe when it's cooked, it doesn't matter. I'm sure that when it's cooked, it just doesn't matter. So maybe I went on this whole rant for no reason, but the reason I went on it is because I started the podcast in my hands. I just smell like a little tiny hint of some shrimp. And it reminded me about speckled trout. It reminded me about my wife doing a crappy job at veining shrimp. So it's my job from now on, because it is a job to make your hands smell like this. This is episode 38 of the Deep Dig podcast. And we call it episode 38 because for one, it is. And for two, we need to talk a little bit about number 38. For the number 38, because my head was turned from the microphone like this and you can't hear me, but then I could come right back to it like this and you can hear me so much better. But number 38, right? Kobe Boyce. And number 4, Anthony Cook started the game. They were probably slated to start the game for one quarter due to the disciplinary action taken against Chris Boyd and Devontae Davis for, I guess, missing or being late to a team function and or team activity. Who knows what that was? And Kobe Boyce got, I mean, he had trouble, and it was very, it would have been very clear by looking at anything that we've done or anything that, I mean, that I've noticed at practices or anything that, you know, Kobe Boyce has some skills. He's got some nice parts to his game, but look, that guy's listed as 6 feet tall. He's not 6 feet tall. He's probably 5'10". I'm sure he is around that 175. He's small. He's a pesterer. He's not necessarily a, you know, at this point at least, if you're going to be blitzing safeties and like what Texas did, if you're going to be blitzing safeties, bringing them up, leaving guys on, you know, leaving guys vulnerable. And it wasn't always like that. You know, the time, actually, the time that Kobe Boyce got pretty burned and put himself in a really bad position, you could almost give a completion allowed to the nickelback, to him, and to Brandon Jones at the safety, who got out of position due to the route that was coming right under Tylan Wallace's route. And Tylan Wallace, by the way, what a damn name. Tylan Wallace sounds like he's one of like a knight on Game of Thrones. Like, I'm Tylan Wallace. Right, or something. Like, isn't Tylan Wallace the one that got like, because I think there's Wallaces on that show. Or what I'm thinking of is William Wallace on Braveheart. And mixing that in with like the Tyrion Lannisters or something or whatever of Game of Thrones. Is there going to be another Game of Thrones? I think we have one more episode or one more season. Why the hell am I talking about Game? Oh, Tylan Wallace. Right. The route coming underneath him. Brandon Jones biting on that one, getting himself out of position. It's almost hard, but you got to put the burn on Kobe Boyce. And when I look at the If you look over the course of the whole season, this guy, and the reason we're talking about Kobe Boyce, he only played 23 snaps in this game, only one quarter in this game, but he had bad coverage on that Wallace touchdown. I mean, it also had to do with just, it looked like, man, PJ Locke was out, like, It was a spot in zone where he could have had help, but the help didn't exist because the other guys were doing things badly too. But still, it was his burn. And then also against Wallace again for 18 yards on what could have been, man, at the time during that first quarter when it was just an onslaught from Oklahoma State. What could have been a pretty important third and eight. Where he allowed an 18-yard completion. So when you look at it all on the season, Kobe Boyce is the only player that's even played a snap for Texas. He's now played 130 snaps for Texas. This is redshirt freshman Kobe Boyce, a guy who Tom Herman last season said that – upon learning about the new redshirt rule, said that he wished that was instituted or had been instituted in this year because specifically the first player to even come off his lips was Kobe Boyce in the way that he's looked in practice. And he's a guy you'd like to get an extended look on. So the staff likes Kobe Boyce, but Kobe Boyce over the course of the entire season of any player that has played at least, well, any player that's even played a snap, anybody. DeAndre Christmas has played one or 10 snaps. He's at least had a tackle. Kobe Boyce on 130 snaps is allowing 75% completions into his obvious coverage. And like I said earlier, sometimes it's hard to tell. There's multiple guys who you could have blamed on that post route touchdown pass to Tylan Wallace. And Tylan Wallace, by the way, is going to be better than James Washington for those guys. He's going to be like, I'll just go out and say it. As far as a prospect, he's going to be better. I don't know if he'll be more prolific. I don't know if he's going to score more, you know, touchdowns or more yards or anything like that. But I've seen a whole lot of James Washington up close. I still need to go see Tylan Wallace in person before I go definitively stamping my evaluation as being, this is, you know, I don't ever go final with anything until I see a player live. But I bet money right now that he's going to be better than James Washington. As a prospect, as an NFL player, just as a, like, that guy's good. His traits are good. And look, if we're going to talk about Chris Boyd and all these other guys as in guys who are going to play in the NFL, I mean, Tylan Wallace, I mean, I don't want to say it's kind of unfair to say that he took Chris Boyd to school, because Chris Boyd in this game, I believe, did have two pass breakups. Not sure entirely off the top of my head if they were against Wallace or not. always. They certainly didn't shadow him or have anybody travel. Devontae Davis was on the right side the whole time. Chris Boyd was on the left side the whole time. Sure seems like most of Tylan Wallace's doing, though, was there on that lining up over there on the right side offensively. Yeah, they avoided Devontae Davis while they threw at Chris Brown 9 times. Clearly into Chris Brown's coverage 9 times. Or I'm sorry, Chris Brown did play, but Chris Boyd, of course I'm talking about Chris Boyd, the cornerback. Chris Brown is right underneath him on the spreadsheet. And Chris Brown, who did play 4 snaps in this one. But getting back to it's episode 38, Kobe Boyce. And we talked about how he had negative production, and he was going up against Tylan Wallace, who I just ended up walking around the whole block about Chris Boyd and Devontae Davis and calling Chris Boyd Chris Brown and all of the rest of it, because I was talking about how Kobe Boyce is the only player on the whole Texas football team who at this point has allowed negative production on the season. He's played 130 snaps. He's missed 2 tackles. He's been burned 3 times. He's been thrown at 16. Allowing a completion percentage of 75% into where he's been clearly targeted. That leads the team, even in front of PJ Locke, who's at 73% right now. And his snaps per burn, sort sheet A to Z, leads the team at 43.33. His nearest competition is Devontae Davis, actually, and then Chris Boyd. Those guys are at 65. Chris Boyd is at 72. It makes sense that those guys would be at the very top because they play outside corner. They're much more like those are the guys who, you know, those are the guys who can get burned with these double moves that we've seen. Caden Stearns, 530 snaps per burn. That kid's good, man. Interesting to look at it like that. So, yes, with just the other thing that I'll say. In the first quarter, whenever Texas gave up the historic yardage on the defensive side of the football, look, having those two corners, now that I, and you guys know that I do this, so I'm thinking to myself, but I think this is important. Because I do this pod before I do the column, because I think that when I just have to sit here and talk to myself like a crazy goddamn person, you know, sitting in my office, I get these ideas. And I'm going to look back and see like the frequency with which they brought these effective blitzes and this effective pressure from BJ Foster in the first quarter versus when they did it through these other quarters. Because if we look at what BJ Foster did in this game, he was behind the line of scrimmage 4 separate times with a hit, a pressure, and then 2 TFLs. And with these linebackers getting all kinds of pressure, I mean, we saw Anthony Wheeler get a sack in this one. Gary Johnson had 2 quarterback hits. He had a pressure, and he's like, I mean, between those two guys, they had between 2.5 and 3 TFLs between, like, depending on how you count them. I'd just be interested in how often they brought these box safeties and linebackers in the first quarter when they were having to give those two, you know, Anthony Cook and Kobe Boyce so much help. It's why they played better. It might be why they played better defense through the course of the game and as the game grew on. But the thing you got to remember about that first quarter too is that was 30% of snaps. So it doesn't seem like that big a deal, but it should have only been 25% of snaps. There was an extra 5% of snaps that was played in that one. It was just a whole lot of offensive plays by Oklahoma State run in the first quarter to where, you know, when you say that Kobe Boyce was only in there for 1 quarter, so only a quarter snaps, that's not quite right. I mean, he was in there for 30% of snaps. Anthony Cook only got thrown out once and didn't allow a completion. So as far as the depth goes, not worried really about Anthony Cook, the true freshman. The guy who a lot of – was he consensus? Like, I think it was the consensus. I mean, I don't do much – don't dip my toes too much into recruiting – like Jason or anybody whose podcast you can always listen to here. But but I think he was the number one corner in Texas. People just forget because he had the rough U.S. Army All-American week of practice leading up to those games down there in San Antonio because he went up against Amon-Ra St. Brown. But he was consensus. Like, Anthony, they didn't throw at him. They didn't throw it over at Devontae Davis either. I mean, I think that they – look, Chris Boyd in this one, it was tough. This whole game, I'll tell you what the – what the theme of this game and what the story of this game was in the first quarter, the Texas defensive line, and here, including Chris Nelson, who's probably the main talking point here, Chris Nelson, the nose tackle, they just had a really great game that nobody's ever going to remember by the stat sheets, especially when this is a game that you – it's a game – this is a game you want to forget as a Texas fan. And so – it was a game about the defensive line just being bad at handling outside zone from an offensive line and an offensive coaching staff, and the linebackers being bad at spilling over those guys in outside zone. You know, making sure if those guys were getting reach blocked, right? Making sure if they were getting driven, you know, off the football, and if not reach blocked, allowing these offensive linemen to do like we talk about in outside zone, man, to get their inside hand up inside, their inside hand up inside your inside armpit and run your ass off to the sideline, right? You're supposed to be spilling over and not allowing that, or at least if that is happening, at least filling in those spots. And the linebackers weren't necessarily doing that in the first half. Texas was garbage against the outside zone run scheme in the first quarter of this game. And it hurt them badly. You also have the fact that there was it could have been that Orlando's hands were a little bit tied with bringing any run stunts or bringing in extra guys in the box or whatever, because you might have been having to worry about giving so much help to those two corners because Chris Boyd and Devontae Davis broke whatever team rule. So you have those two, you know, competing factors. And then, I mean, through the rest of the game, Chris Boyd allowed a few, you know, Tylan Wallace. Tylan Wallace went up against Chris Boyd toe-to-toe, contested catch. And the one thing I'll say about Chris Boyd is everybody is talking so much about and we don't need to talk about the talent that Chris Boyd possesses, right? We don't need to sit here and talk about the fact that he's a fiery competitor. He's a dog. I think the beef with Emmanuel Acho was weird. The beef they got into on, you know, social media. But I don't want to get off onto that topic. This podcast will take too long. But here's the thing. He's being mocked in some NFL mock drafts, Chris Boyd, as a guy who's in the second round. Dare I even say it? Dare I even whisper it? In the first round of some weird website's mock drafts. Like, it's that, I mean, that is, I mean, it's just like, what are we talking? Like, at this point in time, that seems really out of whack. Despite the natural athletic profile and despite the attitude and despite everything else, like, there's still some things to be left to be desired with Chris Boyd. And one of them is just ball skills, man. I have never seen more interceptions bounce off the hands of anybody in my entire life. And look, it's just, it is what it is. That's why he's not a wide receiver, right? But that's why he's not a wide receiver. But I'll tell you, his brother DeMarco could be a wide receiver, like, not a wide receiver, but he's got great hands. I remember in the 7-on-7 state championship, he had a bunch of awesome catches. But then, see, here again, I'm getting off the subject. The issue was Chris Boyd losing in key contested situations like that, and I buried the lead. And here's the lead: missed tackles. geez, am I going to have a bunch of things to write about? I'm about to have to get the hell out of here and start writing if I'm going to get to all this. Let me just get out my sheet, my handwritten sheet that's soaked with actual emotion. The team tied its season high in missed tackles, which was previously 19, with 9:27 left in the damn third quarter. And I quote directly from my notes. And they were written in all caps with exclamation points afterwards. So honestly, whenever I wrote it down, it read more like this. Team had a season high missed tackles 19 at 9:27 left in the third quarter. And then over the course of the rest of the game, it was a total of 24 missed tackles, which would be the second worst. Like, if we took the Charlie Strong era and we took the Tom Herman era and we put them all together in one big bucket, and Tom Herman is saying, please don't put my 2018 football team in the same bucket as these others. I don't want the stink of these teams rubbing off on me the same way it does for me when I'm doing this podcast with shrimp hands. Tom Herman doesn't want that stink. But if you put them all in the same bucket, it would have been the second worst missed tackle performance of both eras. Hilariously, the worst being Charlie Strong's team's 30 missed tackles at Oklahoma State whenever they played there under Charlie. So maybe it's just something in the air at Stillwater. Maybe it's something slippery that Boone Pickens puts in the grass. It's something. It's something. So next time they go to Stillwater, and it'd just be something that we keep in mind. We'll just go over the rankings here really quickly. Let me pull up my production sheet. And we talked about how that's the production sheet from this one. Let's see. Here it is. Okay, so Gary Johnson still up at the very top of the rankings, 482 snaps on the season. His market share is now just completely above everybody else's at 13.45%. It's 6.76 snaps per production caused. He's been a better linebacker for Texas than Malik Jefferson was in 2017. Not necessarily better than he was in 2016, but better than he was in 2017. Gary Johnson's been a stud. He will be drafted if he continues like this. And the big surprise in tier two was Chris Nelson moving up to the very top after 400 snaps played. And here's the deal with Chris Nelson. He made play after play, stuffing these, you know, not in the first quarter, but as the defense settled down and got better against that outside zone run attack, and as Gundy abandoned tempo with that outside zone attack, I mean, I couldn't believe that they kind of went away from that, but they stopped, man. He turtled up a little bit. They started doing things a little differently, and it was fine because they had a quarterback who could pull him out. They had a really good runner. They had an Tylan Wallace is unbelievable, but Chris Nelson was, you know, like all those TFLs, like Texas racked up a bunch of TFLs in this game. They were delivered by run stuffs from Chris Nelson. He's been doing it for the last three games. He's been on a tear with these. NFL scouts or I haven't talked to the NFL scouts about Chris Nelson specifically recently. I will soon. But I'm sure they're beginning to take notice of him surging. At this point, he's playing at a level 8.79 snaps per production caused. So if we match that up against last year, I mean, Puna Ford was at 6.3. But Puna Ford was at 8.84% of the market share. What is... homeboy, where's my sheet? Oh, here he is. Okay. He's at 8.59% of the market share. So what that means is that we're seeing a defense that hasn't been quite as productive as last season, as far as this rating system goes. I think it has to do with the fact that there was the 2017, there's so many more defensive touchdowns, right? 2017, there was one, two, three defense, or no, I'm sorry, three people who scored defensive touchdowns, five touchdowns on defense. So that's actually a good thing that I'm glad I looked at, because that means that while some of these guys' unsustainable production was buoyed by touchdowns and they got 6 points for those, Puna Ford still had about the same percentage of market share as Chris Nelson did, which is, you know, pretty good perspective. And it also matches up with the fact that Chris Nelson is about generates production about once every two snaps or so less. As we go through the rest of the tier two here under Gary Johnson, they're all lumped right together. The average market share for these guys was at like 4.79%. So we have a second tier and a third tier. Tier two, Chris Nelson, Charles Omenihu, Caden Stearns, Brecken Hager, Brandon Jones, Anthony Wheeler, and Chris Boyd. Tier three, B.J. Foster and Devontae Davis. Of starters that you would consider replacement level, that would only be really P.J. Locke, who struggled this year, only 3.84% of the whole defensive market share of productivity, and he's played 503 snaps, which is that the most? No, I think Caden Stearns with the most snaps of anybody on this season, 530. Chris Boyd with 510, P.J. Locke, 5.03, generating production only once every 24.71 snaps. And look, he's a starter. He's been a great player for Texas. He's a fighter. He's an awesome kid. But when we saw Josh Thompson come in this game and play for him, you even heard Tom Herman say it. There's certain kids that when they come in, there's no drop-off. And he was comparing that to what the drop-off was with the outside corners earlier in the game. In this game, we also saw Chris Brown, for some reason, come in and play in relief of B.J. Foster at that dime safety position. And then Chris Brown got hurt after four snaps, and so B.J. Foster came back in. I don't know why B.J. Foster was out. We also saw Josh Thompson come in and play in relief of P.J. Locke, who left early and went back to the locker room just to get, I guess, x-rays or whatever it was. It just turned out he had a bruise. He came back and played. But during that time, you did not notice a drop-off with Josh Thompson. In fact, Josh Thompson, his snaps per production on the season is at 11.10. And he's played a decent allotment. He's played 85 snaps, so better than twice where P.J. Locke is. So, yes, you certainly do not notice a downgrade in any of those guys whenever they go in for their replacements. Chris Brown has been good. P.J. Foster is going to be a better player than Chris Brown has been for Texas, but Chris Brown has been good. And you could argue that Josh Thompson should probably, you know, if it were a meritocracy, should probably be starting over P.J. Locke. The guys after that, Jeffrey McCulloch, Gerald Wilbon, Malcolm Roach, Taquan Graham, Josh Thompson, Marquez Bimage, Chris Brown, Anthony Cook, and DeAndre Christmas. The only player on the entire team that's played a single snap on defense with negative production now becomes Kobe Boyce. My name is Alex Dunlap. This has been the Deep Dig Podcast, episode 38, the Kobe Boyce edition. Episode 39 coming later this week. You can only find it right here on the Yak. Okay.